Good evening, good evening. So where should we start from where? Hi, nice to see you. Yeah, so when did you come? Wow, this is wonderful. I was somehow, you know, associating a little bit, driving far away, you know, meaning maybe New York, or that's what in my mind, you know. Yeah, New York, I thought. Any question from the previous things, or should I go straight? And also anybody helps me remember what we stopped, that we'll do such and such things in next session, do you remember? No?
You didn't say anything about next session.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear what you left with?
Yeah.
Start with the idea of God as intertrimonial teacher.
Yes.
And our relationship with teacher and how it evolves into
philosophy. See? This is where exactly that's where we had stopped. See here, what is the foundation for our love, devotion, anywhere in life? There is a sense of extraordinary love and devotion, willingness to give, willingness to accept in any relationship in life. That's where out of 50 men and women at the university, college, jobs, in our offices, in anywhere, you know, wherever we are living, out of 50, 70 or 100 such people, those who are, you know, just wonderful people, there is nothing wrong with them, and yet we somehow are drawn to a particular individual. We start seeing, exploring, understanding, and one day it grows into a much more serious relationship. We form, we bond with each other. Why not with everybody else? In our normal life, day-to-day life, we think that it is some kind of chemistry between the two which draws one toward another. What is that chemistry? That chemistry is called compatibility. What does it mean, compatibility? Compatibility here means something so subtle that creates a, that brings us on a common ground. And then automatically there is some kind of amazing attraction between the two. And then the details are filled in later. What does this person like? What are his hobbies? And also then both sides start looking at how other person is responding. How often do you kind of reject the offer of having breakfast, you know, kind of brunch, going out? You refuse to go out once, twice, three times, five times. It means there is some indication that something is not as profound here as I have been believing. In normal course of life, we attribute these things to our, quote, samskaras, karmas, destiny, fate, providence. Somehow it doesn't happen when it comes to God. That somehow accidentally or driven by our karma, we happen to love God or not love God. Everywhere else, there are many, many currents and cross currents. There are many, many components. There are many, many elements that we look for, arrange around this, our sense of being compatible to each other. Are we like each other? Then there are lots of logic that we arrange around it by ourselves. Somehow we do not have much region and much resources to arrange those logics and those reasons around so-called God. There is nothing like you can ask God. It's nothing like that you invite God that let's have Sunday brunch together. No? Many, many such opportunities are not there. You cannot, you know, chat with God on, let's say, WhatsApp. No, Skype. That facility is not there. This for mind has not gone. Where we can invent some system, have real communication with God. And the systems that so far have been developed for us, it's very artificial. There is no substance in it. Whether it is Hinduism or whether it's Christianity, for example, there is a system that has been developed how to communicate with God. No. When you do the prayer, Jai Jai Devi Parapar Rupini, Jai Jai Jagatam Janayatri, Jai Jai Leela Bhasita Sakale, Jai Jai Sarvashray Rupi, Hail Mother Mary. When we are chatting with somebody, communicating with somebody, writing an email, or just on, we are posting our, you know, selves. What's called a new, what's called that when you post new picture of yourself? What's called that? New profile. Huh?
Facebook.
Uh-huh. What's called that?
Profile.
Yeah. I changed my profile, no? Let's say, Linda changed her profile. 7 likes and 3 dislikes. No? It's very tangible, very real, you understand? You know? And you have some reason to really react to it. And here you are telling, Jai Jai Devi Parapar Rupini. And if you are Muslim, you go like this, Jai Jai Devi Parapar Rupini, Jai Jai Jagatam Janayatri. No? Because God is there, and they have developed a system of holding their hands like this. Jai Jai Devi Parapara Rupini, Jai Jai Jagatam Janayatri. Somebody has developed this system. Somebody has developed this system. Jai Jai Devi Parapara Rupini, Jai Jai Jagatam Janayatri. Somebody has developed a system. Where you say this thing with entire band, you know, there is whole orchestra. Then you sing. And according to that particular, you know, your system, your faith, your way of so-called chatting, communicating, establishing relationship, or strengthening that bond, you have to have, you know, if your, you know, the piano is better and bigger, or your harmonium and tabla is better and bigger, and there are many, many other musical instruments. Whole paraphernalia is around there. And that paraphernalia has to be according to your system, your culture. Then you think it makes sense, but the truth is, still it doesn't make sense. That's why we go to our temple, church, mosque, guru, priest, you know, guide. Can you tell me, I really want to see God. People say, I want to see God. That much, you know, people have somewhat, you know, imagination. Their imagination goes that far. You know, nobody has gone to a priest or Swami or Pandit or anybody saying, you know, my greatest desire to marry God. You know, that's almost like impossible. I want to have, you know, you are my teacher, I love you, but I want God to be my teacher. It's like, there is a sense there, am I really that good? That God will sit down as a teacher and he will give me 3-hour lecture and I will study with him. This much confidence is not there that God could be somebody so real, so real, so real that I will propose, and even if God has some problems, you know, marrying me, I will overcome that problem, you know. That's what people do. Even there are some yoga, what you call dating, happening in our society. And there is a yoga compatibility, you know. Tests like you have SAT and things like that. So yoga compatibility, you know, tests. And don't think that I'm, you know, joking. Yoga International is a great place and it has become even a greater place now. We hear these kinds of things. So now we are exploring what are things happening out there. Well, there is a wonderful market out there. They look at their system is market system. You know, that what is market demanding? There are people, those who are looking for yoga compatibility in their, you know, relationship. And what that means, are you interested in asana? Are you interested in meditation and organic meal and non-gluten, you know, diet? And do you like going to the shrines in India or Bahamas? You know, there are certain set of traits, interests, you know, which determine whether we two yogis can have a good time together. Let us explore with God. None of those things are known to us. And whatever so far has been described, seems to be something beyond our comprehension. And sometimes it is said that God is beyond our comprehension. How can we establish a relationship and channel our love and devotion, you know, and dedication to God, who is totally outside, you know, our thought process, imagination, far, far, far away. Because in relationship, bhakti, that's what bhakti is. We need something more tangible than this abstract concept of God. Okay? And we need an assurance that's really true. It's not just my own imagination. And therefore, this kind of relationship with God is harder than having any relationship with those whom we know and whose qualities, characteristics, and attributes, tastes, and interests are somewhat similar to ours. And it is where, this is where so-called bhakti yoga gets in trouble. Despite that we know deep down, we know that there is a higher reality. But exactly what does this higher reality mean, we don't know. We have been hearing for tens of thousands of years that God loves us. And yet, we have not been able to really pinpoint exactly, here is how God loves us, here is how God loves us, here is how God loves us. It has not been elaborated. And whatever little bit elaboration we find in every culture is somewhat totally from different direction, different way. And what is that? If you do this, God will be upset and you will be punished. That part has been told to us more than if you do this, God will be very happy. And whatever, wherever it has been said that if you do, God will be happy, is hardly, very few, and it's culturally very narrow. But what you do that God, that will make God unhappy and displeased, or hold this very big list. And so many things that that list include the things which have a hard time avoiding. You know? So things which are supposed to do in order to please God are quite hard to do in life. And things which are which make God upset, you know, are so easy to do, and we are doing it quite often in our daily life. So there is this sense of hesitation. Just to imagine, which I deal with this kind of thing. Example I will give you of someone who has led a very gentle, loving, kind, generous, honest life. The money that person made, the money that person has made in last, let's say, 70, 75 years of his life, 75 at least, now is very old, in his mid-90s. It's just sheer hard work. No? The only one thing, and generosity, amazing soul. No, in India, in America, and in many other places, wherever you see, there are, you know, the effects of his good work. You can find many, many, many places. One thing he somehow couldn't fulfill was his teacher, whom he loved very, very, very much, asked him to come. And he could not come when his teacher asked him to come. And just a few days after, the teacher died. That feeling has gone so deep in his mind. Why did I do that? How will I face him when I die? There are, in midst of many, many other old age related factors and death related, you know, the process of dying related factors, in the midst of many, many such factors. There are many, many factors, but one of the factors is, how will I face my master, my teacher? See here, if this kind of tendency, let's say if something happens, goes into your mind, that you have done this thing wrong, this thing wrong, this thing wrong, then this feeling itself will make you very hesitant to face that divinity whom you thought that you must not be disrespectful or must not neglect, but you neglected. And in life, who is the most neglected fellow? Is God. We don't neglect checking our, we are not careless in checking our emails. We are not careless about doing many, many other things. So many things, we are very sincere, very prompt. But when it comes to, quote, attending much higher divinity, Lord of our life, we don't have time. So many reasons are there. Well, I don't understand exactly what, how, and etc. My mind runs all over. But at some point, you begin to feel that, no, there is something you are not getting. Somewhere you are missing the point. And that becomes ground for your guilt. And this way goes on and on throughout life. So here what Bhakti Yoga tells us, that you, just as you make an effort in your day-to-day life to intensify your love in your daily, you know, in your worldly relations, figure out a system whereby you can intensify your loving relationship with higher divinity. Where does it start? It starts with understanding. If you start paying attention to all these silly details of your boyfriend, girlfriend, you will never find a suitable boyfriend or girlfriend in your life. I don't like her hair. I don't like the way he sits. I don't like the food, the kind of restaurant he's drawn to. You know, you just go into all the details. You know, look at her front upper teeth. You know, is too big and comes. You know, it pokes out. You know, her eyebrows are too thick. Her buttocks are like this. You just go on making list, you know. And again, living here, being in the position where I am, I really face these kinds of things. Somebody comes, a gigantic, huge list of kind of wife he's searching for. I said, my God, where is that kind of person? You know? Did you ever consult the creator, you know, whether or not this kind of person has been ever created? You know? So, how are you going to get here? And furthermore, have you ever thought about yourself? At least I'm 5'2", 5'2.5", you know, and with my little bit nicer shoes, I can stretch myself to, you know, I can do my all stretching and then put on shoes, and I can stretch myself to 5'3". But you, mister, you are only 5'1". You know? You are negative. You are, you know, judgmental. You are suspicious. You know, and you are self-righteous. And when you are measuring your partner whom you have not even identified, when you are just, you know, looking at all these lists, do you think that anybody will like you? No? Well, this is what we start doing. Even in our so-called spiritual practices, what will happen? Your love will not come to you anymore. You already contaminated, vitiated it. Understanding means simplification. You simplify yourself. Relax, you know, in our modern life. Relax, boy, relax. Don't be so obsessed. You know? Somebody divorced her husband because her husband, and believe me, none of my examples are, you know, taken from any books. Whole marriage fell apart because the wife kept thinking, kept telling that you are not practicing yoga. Person says, I practice yoga. What do you mean? You don't do asana? You don't do alternate nostril breathing? But I do my meditation. I said, no. Furthermore, this person used to work in New York City, long, long hours. And at the end of the day, he liked to have relatively bigger meal. And the wife was not working. So she was following Himalayan Institute style schedule. Light breakfast, heavy lunch, and very light dinner. This man has to rush hardly by the time he's coming out, he has to take many, subways and then buses, etc., from Jersey City going to Manhattan. By the time he reached there, it was 8 o'clock. He used to go late, but he used to come back very late. And dinner was always something. He was extremely hungry. And Indian kind of diet he liked. He was from India. And so he had an Indian diet, dal, that is, split beans, and bread, rice, sabji, vegetables. But dal is an essential part of vegetarian diet, and he was strict. He did not have any meat or anything. So he wanted to eat dal. Of course, dal is heavy in the night time. He's tired, goes to bed, and he used to pass gas in the night time. She reminded him, she became quiet. No, I will not let you eat dinner. Haven't you learned anything at the Himalayan Institute? So he said, in the weekend, on the day I don't have to work, that day I will follow Himalayan Institute schedule. I said, no. Finally, she divorced him. No. This is what a problem is there with God. And really, people become that petty. That petty. What is missing here? Understanding. Understanding means simplicity. Simplicity that provides nourishment to your innocence. And there is a big difference between innocence and being ignorant. Ignorance and innocence are two entirely different things. You are a gentle person. It does not mean you are timid. You are simple, an uncomplicated person. It does not mean that you are foolish and dull. What you are is that you are just such a simple person that when you see the reality, you don't make it become complicated. This is a quality that you have to cultivate. Very, very, very first thing. In the scripture, now I will bring it to the subject here, that how do you cultivate, who is really fit for establishing a good relationship with God and nurturing it to the point where it evolves into trustful surrender. And that trustful surrender ultimately becomes transports you, that trustful surrender transports you to the highest state of realization and understanding. First level of understanding is something what intellectually induced by you. It's not absolutely correct understanding because you don't know. You have never experienced that reality in its fullness. And yet you are trying to cultivate some understanding, and understanding has to be extremely simple, straightforward, not complicated. How do you start? Now here is the formula, which is like formula that comes from Narada's Bhakti Sutra and the Bhakti Sutra of Sandilya and further elaborated in many, many other scriptures. The formula is Tranadapi sunichena taroriva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Who is really fit for worshipping, contemplating, communicating, establishing a good, real, solid, functional, loving relationship with higher divinity. You may want to write it down a little bit, you know, long Sanskrit. Trinadapi, T-R-I, Trinadapi, Sunichena, Trinadapi, Sunichena, Taro, Riva, Sahishununa, Amanina, Man, Amanina, Manadena, Kirt, Niyaha, Sada, Harihi. This is a verse. Trinadapi Sunichena, Taro Riva Sahishnuna, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniyaha, Sada Harihi. Hari, Lord, can be worshipped, venerated, respected, embraced by someone who is Trinad Api Sunichena, by someone who is even humbler than blades of grass. You are walking on the grass. It's humble. It just bends. Doesn't mind when you are walking on it. Even if it gets hurt a little bit here, there, it's all right. The new shoots come out. It's humble. Water comes, it just bends, water goes away. Storm comes, little bit it waves, flattens. Big storm comes, it destroys the whole house, destroys the big trees, but not the grass. Grass is still there. Whereas if you look at it, grass is much, much weaker than the tree. The foundation, the root system of grass is not as strong as the, you know, the foundation of your garage or your house. Your house, your garage gets destroyed. The grass is not destroyed. It's humble. Trinadapi Sunichena. Taro Riva Sahishnuna. Taro Iyo. And one who is Sahishnuna, one whose tolerance is forbearance, tolerance, fortitude, is even higher than Tarohyu, is like that of a tree. Tree stands in all climates, all seasons. You know, if it's a very harsh kind of heat and then cold, then its bark thickens, cracks, it sheds its bark, outer one, and the new ones from deep inside, they grow. It may drop its leaves, no? It may drop its leaves. But it is, what it has is the quality of tolerance. It doesn't complain, it's just there. No? Amanina, manadena. And one who is amani, amani means really totally oblivious to his or her so-called social status or respect and honor and dignity, doesn't really mind how he or she is being treated by others, because it does not has no expectation of being respected by anybody. And yet, mana dena, one who gives respect to all. Without expecting any respect from anyone, one who dispenses respect to others. It is by such person, kirtaniyaha sada harihi. Sada means always, Hari, Lord, kirtaniyaha can be embraced, can be the only such person can truly sing the glory of God. Now look at its implication. That this is what is binding us out there. We don't have tolerance. We don't have fortitude, forbearance. We are bothered by everything. Our mood is off. No? Because we could not tolerate the behaviors of our friends, loved ones. And definitely will not be able to tolerate the behaviors of mistreatments of those whom we have already decided that they are our enemies or those who are not us. But even when something touchy kind of things is there, we are just hung on to it. We don't let it go. Attachment to the object of dislike is stronger than attachment to the object of our like. What we hate, we are attached to what we hate. Our attachment to what we hate or who we hate is stronger than our attachment to what we love and whom we love. This is nature of our mind. In your daily behavior, interaction, in your daily experience, you can clearly see how perturbed you are and how long you remain perturbed by an unpleasant experience. The object of your hatred, avarice, is very, very, tempting. You have a hard time falling asleep. Next day morning when you walk into the same very office, it's like a prison, it's like a hell. And all the good things that have happened between two of you is so easily forgotten. Something not so pleasant that has happened between two of you is very, very difficult to forget. Therefore, we are spending so much of our energy, mental energy, emotional energy, spiritual energy, over there in this respect that we have hardly any energy left to invest it, in our spiritual pursuit, which is, let's say, in this particular context, is our love and devotion and trustful surrender to God. Taroryu sahishtuna. It's like we have no tolerance at all. Just jump to conclusion. It's like there is an attachment. To the source of our inflammation. Anything and anyone that creates tapa, distress, we hang on to it. We just hold on to it. And if it is repeated, we cannot tolerate at all. It's done, finished. Now imagine how much energy goes in that direction. Sometimes generations go by. I did not have an opportunity to really observe the social structure much here in this country. But I have observed in India. I was very close to that society as growing up as a teenager and adult. When I came here, I became a teacher, so I lost some of those opportunities. There I was just a young kid growing, and whatever was happening around me, I was totally part of it. And I was not in a situation, neither I had knowledge, nor I had the opportunity, privilege, to avoid seeing unpleasant things which were happening around me. So I saw those things. So in my village, there are two communities. One is called community of Brahmanas, our community, and community of Kshatriyas. 4 generations ago, there was big fight between these two, and from both sides, 3 people on one side and 2 people on another side died, and at least 30, 40 of them were extremely badly injured in that fight. People from all the adults from both sides, they came up with their spears and with their sword and with their knives, with their bamboo sticks, and they fought with each other. And from both sides, 7, 8 people from each side, they went to jail. And some of people, they were in jail forever. It was lifelong imprisonment, because they were convicted for first degree murder. And other second degree and so on. And therefore, somebody stayed in jail for 5 years, somebody for 10 years, somebody 12 years. So this way. 4 generations ago, it was in the beginning of the century, long before I was ever born, even born. But these two people have zero tolerance for each other. So bad that someone in our extended clan, Brahmin family, let's say, deliberately raised a bull, male bull, extremely big, spent fortune raising that bull and training the bull to be angry bull. And in India, the custom is stamping bull with a red with the heart branding. Yeah. So there is a system in India, if you brand your bull and then leave it in the public, then that bull is not supposed to be stopped by anybody. That bull can roam anywhere, go in anybody's property and eat. And definitely you cannot hurt that bull. That bull is associated with religion and is for reproducing purpose. But somehow, this one group figured out how to train this bull in a manner that this bull recognizes the people from that community and charges at that community. And this is 4 generations after. When I was growing up, I was 4th generation in that phenomena. The mind goes that far. Now, just imagine. What kind of God can you expect to love when your mind is filled with this level of, vengeance? And not only that, these people had 0% tolerance to each other, toward each other, but even they looked for an opportunity to express their lack of tolerance. They looked for an opportunity to blame and then fight. Well, this is an extreme thing, but this extreme thing is not very rare in our world. There are so many, many things you can see at community level and and social level, national level, in the world of politics and religion, and just goes on. You know? And so here, this is what this scripture is telling. This sounds very simple. It doesn't seem that you are actively really practicing any love and devotion to God, but you are preparing good ground for it. You know? You are creating a mental environment as well as the environment outside yourself where you will have much more greater reason to preserve your energy for something better and positive. No? Next, simple, very, very simple things have been observed. One of the rules, which again, it does not make very much sense if you really, really, if you look at just through a pure, through the lens of pure logic. But it does make very much sense. Example is, if you are passing, you are on the road, and somewhere, or let's say you are walking, and if there is very magnificent tree, big tree, mentally do pranam, you offer your respect to that tree because that tree is so ancient, aged, much senior to you, and it's a living being. This is an established thing in the bhakti yoga. And how do you offer your respect, love to the tree? By remembering the name of God or a mantra or your very, very favorite prayer, which is short prayer. So when you connect yourself with that entity. You connect yourself with this magnificent presence of that tree. By acknowledging the seniority of, by acknowledging the fact that this tree is somewhat significant and respected entity, respected thing, respected being, actually being. Now look at the training that you are giving to your mind. It is a tree. And of course, a sheep herder, if a sheep herder is passing by and he is accompanied by, let's say, a couple of hundred sheep and goats, he will just cut a few branches and drop the branches on the floor, on the ground, so that the sheep can eat its leaves. For the shepherd, it is just a tree, and the leaves of the tree are perfectly fine to be consumed by, eaten by his sheep and goats. What you are doing here, you are cultivating a mind that has or that will have capacity to see the unseen. Feel the presence of something which senses cannot detect. There's a living reality in that tree. And that reality is very respectable. What do you mean, this respect? If you are a politician, and if your eyes are set on a political post, and if the whole your world revolves around, you know, this political world, political circle, then you have for you somebody, you know, who has won the elections and become, you know, president of the United States, is a respected person. Because you are also in the same field. If you are a spiritual seeker, you will see another spiritual person. No, although loving a spiritual person who is known for his spiritual achievements is very hard. Having respect for someone who is known for his or her spiritual achievement is very hard if you are also trying to be him and you are trying to replace him. It just simply, that fellow is just a competitor. You are competing. You may have a fake respect and invite, and you may want to have photo op. That's okay. That's a different story. But respect is not something just suddenly one day you decide and it's there. You have to cultivate a mind for that. Loving God without having any respect for God, it doesn't work. And how can you respect God when you do not know what this fellow is all about? But here there is a tree. You are on your morning walk, and that tree rises on your own trail. Very magnificent tree. Or it's a very unique kind of tree. It's people tree, it's Bodhi tree. So you acknowledge the presence of higher soul in it. Is that higher soul in it? Do you have any clear answer about it? And is your answer, suppose you say yes, there is a higher soul in it. Is the soul of this tree is bigger or more lofty, more grand than the soul that is in the smaller trees, you know, in bush, in the weeds? You have no logic. No logic can explain it. Are you trying to feel the presence of a higher consciousness, higher reality, higher soul in that tree, so that you can put yourself down, so that you can compare yourself with this big higher reality and infuse your mind with inferiority complex? Is it that's what you are trying to do? What are you trying to accomplish here? It's just simply sheer idea that there is a higher reality. And it wherever there is a sense of grandeur manifesting in anything, it is the manifestation of that very source of grandeur, that is higher reality, the Lord of Life. The Bhagavad Gita says that in chapter 13, I think, that among the horses, I am such and such horse, Uchchaisrava. Among the elephants, I am such and such elephant. Among the trees, I am Ashwatha, the Bodhi tree. No? And amazing thing, among sages, I am such and such sage. Among the magicians, I am such and such magician. No? In women, I am Sri, I am beauty, and this indescribable feeling, that indescribable feeling that exudes from a woman. She is shy and yet she is expressive. She exhibits and declares her presence and grabs people's attention by manifesting her shyness. Wow. Absolute contrast. By not letting seen, she is wanting to be seen. That quality in women is me. It's my quality. It is in that form I live in women. And among the yogis, I am dhairya. Patience, because it is the patience that, you know, allows you to endure the storms of obstacles and impediments and hardship. So I am the patience in the minds and hearts of the seekers and adepts. So what is he trying to do? What is Gita? What is Krishna or Gita is trying to tell us? That you expand your understanding of higher reality and prepare your mind and heart to greet a reality the reality which is so big that it can't fit in your small, you know, world made up senses, perceived by senses. Senses are too small to comprehend that. And you are preparing your mind, you are preparing your senses to see which cannot be seen. You are preparing your senses to feel the presence of presence of that subtle reality which is outside the domain of sensory, you know, let's say objective world. And this is how you prepare step by step. The thing here is, freedom is the most highly sought thing in our life. All of us are looking for freedom. Freedom in terms of religious freedom, freedom of speech. Freedom means I should live the way I want to live. And no obstruction allowed. Now, all of us have our ego. All of us want to be unmatched, unsurpassed, better than everybody. This tendency gets passed on even in our search. It is only as long as we have not seen God, we have not found God, we may be comfortable with a God who is superior to us. But as soon as anyone, anything superior to us is there, it's extremely painful to have that fellow next to us. How do you know that this tendency is really that strong? Because it requires very, very, what you call, sharp mind to comprehend it. The thing is, if you observe, if you analyze your own attitude, you will be able to see that one of the things that is very hard for us is the idea of dying. If we do not know who we are, where we came from, and where we are going, and whether or not there is any higher reality beyond our known world, then definitely death is also accompanied by a great deal of uncertainty. And there seems to be a reason why we should be afraid of that death. But there is one more subtler element. If we have been on the path of spirituality and have been praying for our whole life, oh Lord, you know, help me, you know, give me salvation, moksha, etc. There is a feeling that I might merge in God, very scary. And our preference at that time is, if God can save us, then that's wonderful. And what does it mean? I remain the way I am. And that this saving our soul means that we dissolve in God. Very scary. If God dissolves in us, that is better. Okay. But we dissolving in God, that is not fun. That's not fun at all. Where is this tendency coming from? First thing, of course, lack of understanding about ourselves and our relationship with the higher reality, and also about the higher reality itself. Other thing is, next one is, our strong desire to maintain our self-identity. This always creates an obstacle. And we are now, most of us are caught in between our wanting to have God in life and between and not having God too close to us. Give me what I want. But don't disturb my life. It is almost like having a friend come and be your guest. And there is some ground rule for guests. When I'm with my wife or husband in my bedroom sleeping in the night, please don't walk into my bedroom and don't sleep between my wife and me. Okay? This ground rule for all the guests. If somehow the guest does not follow this ground rule, I don't think that such guest will be welcome. This far, our mind does not go this far. Whether do we have this level of surrender, this level of understanding? No, normally don't have. So what are we trying to do in the name of practicing love, devotion, and surrender to God? We are just playing like kids, that's it. In part we know what we are doing, in part we do not know what we are doing. In part we want to know what we are doing, in part we do not want to know what we are doing. This is love and devotion of an unenlightened person. Love and devotion of someone who is caught between wanting and not wanting, knowing and not knowing, surrendering and not surrendering. It is love and devotion and surrender, practice of love and devotion and surrender of someone who is caught between loving and not loving, selflessness and selfishness. To reach to the next step, we need purification, refinement. And any of the practices that we are doing is just for bringing that refinement in our mind and heart, our own intention. The practices we do, whether it's japa or some degree of austerity, penance, purification, or meditation, rituals, pilgrimage, recitation of the Bible, Quran, all these practices have one single focus, goal, and that is refining our own intention and be able to look at our own intention and identify exactly what it is and not be afraid of bringing some refinement in it. There has been a samskara, there has been very, very deep-rooted, subtle impressions. There are very, very deep-rooted, subtle impressions in our mind of subtle impressions of fooling ourselves. And as a result, we really are not clearly receptive of what is there. And we are not really willing to know it very much. Upon knowing that, I might see the subservient nature of myself. I might see that there is no reason for me to really be that concerned with our self-identity. That is very scary, that I might lose even a reason to really retain my self-identity. I do not want that even reason to be there, or I might lose my self-identity. This is a subtle function of avidya, maya, ignorance. One. Next point, fear. Although whatever I have been telling, if you analyze, it's ultimately summarizes into fear. All this is a fear. And fear of not being able to be what we are is called fear of death, fear of loss. Something is very dear to us. Losing that is like dying. When our loved ones die, why does it make us so sad? What is the anatomy of grief that walks into our life when we lose our loved ones? In yoga, people have done a great analysis, very, very, very profound analysis. The person was suffering, whether it is young child, teenage, adult, our own children, parents, brother, sister. We can clearly see how much that person was suffering. But we do not have actual experience of the pain of that person. Someone is suffering from, pancreatic cancer. I have heard that pancreatic cancer is very painful. And person is struggling. So when that person is struggling, we are also very sad about it. We are affected by it. Why? We just simply say, because he's my son, I love him. So what? His body is here, not your body. You don't understand. If you ask this question to a family member of somebody who is dying of pancreatic cancer, the family members will immediately tell you that, or they will conclude that you are just absolutely mindless, crazy fellow that you are asking this question. This question doesn't, even this question is inappropriate. Don't you see? She's my little sister. It's my own mom. Explain it, please. What? Person will not want you ever to visit her house anymore. But what is there that is so painful to you about somebody else suffering from cancer? Just because that person is so dear to you, it really affects your body. Is it there that much closeness that person's pancreas and your pancreas are exactly experiencing the same very thing? Are you going to die of that pancreatic cancer? The person dies. So there was suffering associated with that person's suffering. Now person is dead, and then you are drowning in sorrow and grief for such a long time. Why is that? What is there? It's loss. Loss of someone, something, which was very dear to you, and you had hoped that you will not lose that person. And there is an emotional bond between you and that person. Now so much destruction is happening in Yemen these days. And even media doesn't cover it. No? Whereas if something had been happening, let's say in Syria, Iraq, media was covering it. The amount of sorrow and pain that is in Yemen is far, 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 thousand times, perhaps even tens of thousand times more intense than what was a few months ago in Ukraine. And yet, we are not concerned about it. Why? It is not, Yemen is not something connected to us. People of Yemen, they are not us. We as a nation don't have any political, we are not politically wedded with each other. Our pain and sorrow, our joy and happiness are not that well connected to each other. Therefore, the whole country is destroyed by one party or the other. It's not really that big deal. Look at the nature of this fear, loss. Why? Why one thing is a greater source of sorrow and grief, and why other thing is not? Whereas it's at the, you know, at the, in real life, it's exactly the same. Loss of life, human pain, sorrow, misery, death, destruction, etc., etc. You know, and so this is called understanding, analysis. This is what we have to analyze. What are we afraid of? We are afraid of losing ourselves, our identity, self-identity. It's very dear to us. All these identities that I'm American, I'm Christian, I'm Jewish, and I'm white, I'm black, and all that thing, these are all secondary identities. Our real identity is that we are we. That identity which really, on which you can superimpose millions of other identities, that identity is about to be lost. And you are afraid of losing it. And that means, even if somehow we are fully convinced that no, you are not going to lose it, you are going to merge into that higher reality. I love higher reality. I know it exists. I go to church every Sunday. I offer, you know, 10 pounds of, you know, laddus and chocolate to buy Ganesha. Everything is fine. If God is gracious, He is most welcome to come and dissolve in me. I have two hands, He has four. Together we'll have six. And I can make more money with six hands. Okay? God is great. I dissolve in God in the place of four hands. Now He got six. How am I going to benefit from it? We think that we do not have this logic, but the thing is, deep down, this logic is going on. That's why we are afraid. Despite the truth that I am very devout Hindu, Christian, Muslim, therefore I have all good reasons to go and merge in God and be with God. But when the time comes, I'm horrified. You know? Better to go and escape somewhere in the hospital. There might be still chance, you know, that the doctor might be able to save my life. No one at the time of death immediately hires priest. Thank you, sir, priest. Take me to the church. Take me to the temple. No dying man has ever expressed the desire to be taken to the church. Except my mother. She was literally dying. 3 a.m, somebody came, knocked at my door, and Meera, myself, we rushed. Unconscious, dying, and we started doing all kinds of things. She got little strength. And what she said? And only Meera and myself could understand what she was telling. She did not have that strength. She wanted us to put Ganga water in her mouth and turn on the name of 1,000 names of God on tape recorder. That was the, you know, on cassette tape. And 3 a.m, we called, you know, our manager, Ashok, and all the whole commotion starts. And meanwhile, we just held her head in my lap, half in Meera's lap, half in my lap. And I said, "Mom, can I do myself?" She was so happy that her son is not dependent on cassette tape. By the time I completed half of it, she was almost alert. By the time I completed, now she's getting younger and stronger every day. For the last 3 years, she's getting better every day. There are people, it's not that the whole world is like this. There are lots of people, those who are more excited at the last phase of their life than they were excited about life itself, you know. It's like, what a great thing, you know. Soon I'll be meeting the Lord of my life. Mom, how do you know that you will? Because there is no other place in the world. That's the only place. That's where the whole universe, you know, goes back to. That's where everything is held. It's like, that's the hub. You know? If you are foolish, just close your eyes and force yourself to become blind, then you will not see where you just happen to be. Otherwise, that's the only place to be. I said, "Wow, great, my mom. You know, I need more satsang with you so that I can hold some satsang, evening satsang at the Himalayan Institute and talk from direct experience of, if not my own experience, at least experience of my mother." You know, some of you, those who have seen my mother, you know, amazing soul. There are lots of such people. It's not that fearless people. Those who are so, they are so, you know. There is a book called Dictionary of Miracles that documents Christian saints from, you know, AD 70. You know, very beautiful. Just short stories of the great, great saints and, you know, souls from Christian tradition. That how fearless, how confident they were, and how perfect was their this surrender, how perfect was their trust, that they're not moved by anything out there. If you are beheading me, what's the big deal? My head already belongs to the Lord. You know? Take it. And so much, it's like, no, their whole desire was that one day they will offer. If hopefully, I love if I could offer even my head at the feet of Lord. I wish I could just offer my heart with my own hands to the Lord. Such intense desire that this fellow is bearded, and after the head is totally separated from his shoulders, he picks up his head and holds his head, walks out from the, you know, the place where he was beheaded at the palace, the court of the king, and goes outside of the, you know, city and buries his own head. And buries means he's making offering. And then after he buries his own head, then his body falls apart and so-called, quote, dies. Now, look at the level of his trustful surrender. Where is it coming from? It's his understanding. It's not like because Bible says or because somebody says, because of this region and because of that region, God exists. No. I exist. Do I know why do I exist? Is it the reason that I know why I exist? There is a, here because of such and such reason. Here is the, here are the, because of such and such reason, it is proven that I exist, and therefore I should believe in my existence. Do you ever think this way? Never. The day we start believing in existence of God, not because of this reason, God seems to exist, therefore I believe in the existence of God. No, when we have crossed that limit, that is when the true love for God comes in. How do we cultivate that kind of understanding in the existence of God? That is the subject matter of next session. Thank you very much. God bless you. Wow, prayer time. Darlene, in this kind of situation, how, if suppose if somebody is there, how does the prayer happen there then, in the shrine?
Oh, in the shrine right now? The backups, but the backups are here.
Today, backup is also here. Oh, okay.